Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. We are going to start out talking about the world's largest trivia contest with Jim Oliva of Stevens Point, also known as Oz, who's been organizing and writing the annual Spring Trivia Contest in Stevens Point for the last 27 years. You know, in this central Wisconsin town of 25,000 people, half of them will be officially registered to participate in this year's contest, and it's a real pleasure to welcome Jim Oliva to the telephone. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Glad to have you
good
with
morning.
Us today.
Good to be here.
For 54 hours every April, Stevens Point becomes the trivia capital of the world, and Trivia 38 will kick off at 6 p.m. on Friday, April the 20th. And you've been at this for more than 25 years.
Yep, this will be my 29th year, as a matter of fact. And I've been looking in the mirror a lot lately and saying, boy, you're older than you used to be.
And how do you know that? When you look yourself in the mirror, don't you see someone who's just as young as they were when they came to Point?
No, my hair used to be a lot darker, and my beard was all one color.
When you came to Stevens Point, you were teaching math, weren't you?
Correct.
Where?
At Ben Franklin Junior High School.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching ninth grade math over there.
And I suppose that, like most teachers, you tired of that after a while?
Yes, but not the kids.
Right. And then somehow you've spent the last couple of decades running a computer store.
That's correct.
But that's really a secondary thing to your life as the king of the trivia contest.
Yeah, actually, I remember one time talking to the principal at the junior high, and he was telling me about how proud I should be of being a teacher and all of that. And I said, you know, the thing I'm the most proud of in my life, and he said, what? I said, writing the trivia contest. And he kind of shook his head and walked away.
Well, let's talk about what it takes to write a trivia contest. First off, this is a 54-hour event broadcast on the university's student radio station.
Correct.
WWSP 90 FM, which is really 89.9, but we fudge that. Is that it?
That's true. In the day when it was all analog tuners, 90 FM was close enough, but now with digital equipment, 89.9 is the exact
The exact frequency.
Yes.
It includes more than 400 teams competing against each other, and as I mentioned, there are more than 12,000 people officially registered to participate, so this is much more than just somebody sitting around in their house.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of players on a team. Over the years, I can say that I've seen teams range in size from one singleton on there to 400.
Mm-hmm. And there must be a reason why there would be that many people on a team.
It really does help if you're sleeping in shifts and you have people throughout the year that can take notes on different specialties. I mean, everybody knows the couch potato, and he sits there and watches TV or watches movies, and if they happen to be taking notes while they're doing that, all the better. And then, of course, you know, there's people that are the sports fanatics, and they know every piece of minutia that you could ever want to know about sports, and it's nice to have them on the team.
This contest began in 1969 as a one-day affair with 16 hours, 80 questions, and a handful of teams. And then I found out that it was inspired by a radio trivia event at Lawrence College, which in turn was inspired by an even earlier contest at Beloit College.
Right.
So Wisconsin is the hotbed of trivia contests.
It seems to be. It must have. As I've talked to many people over the years, and they all seem to say, well, you know, what else would you do at the end of a winter?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, and so it just seems that the winters seem to breed this kind of activity at the end of the winter. They always say it's kind of like this is the first real activity of the spring.
Our guest is Jim Oliva. Stevens Point. He is known as Oz there, especially when the trivia contest is going on. He's been organizing and writing this contest for the last 27 years. And if you'd like to join the conversation with a question or a comment, or maybe you are a contestant, we'd be happy to hear from you. In Madison, the local number is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Of course, that's toll-free, and we have lines open for you, so you can get on fairly quickly. You start writing this contest in the very first part of the year, and it takes you a few months to put it all together. How many questions do you have to come up with?
Well, the finished product is about 440 questions.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. And we try to, there's two of us that write it, myself and John Eckendorf. And the main objective here is that it's a media-type trivia contest. So there's going to be questions on television and radio and music and movies and advertising, periodicals, books, comic books, anything that is a media-oriented type of thing. And you know, I mean, there's medical questions, there's not a whole lot, but there's history questions and literary questions as well. But we try not to get too deep into the education aspect of things, more of just the common type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the official kickoff for me is January 1st, watching the Rose Parade, in which I take about, this year I took 4.5 pages of notes on the Rose Parade.
And so one of those, more than one, may be included in the 440-some questions that will be ready to go come April 20th.
It's pretty much a given that there'll be a question from the Rose Parade. That teams have learned to watch the Rose Parade and take notes, and then you know we just the whole idea is to not you know you don't want to run you know three TV questions in a row. I don't even like running two TV questions in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have a television question, then a movie question, then maybe a comic book question, then a general knowledge question, then maybe another TV question. So we try and split it up. Obviously, television is an important part of life. Movies are an important part of life. So we have the emphasis on those. But just try to mix it up and keep the questions moving along so that in an hour, which there are eight questions each hour, that hopefully four questions can be answered pretty much off the top of the head. Two questions are going to require a little bit of work. And, of course, the Internet. When I say top of the head, that also includes Internet.
Mm-hmm.
Many teams will... they'll know the question. They'll know the answer right off the top of their head. But boy, they just have to go out on the internet and check that out, which drives me insane because I've never understood that. And in many cases, they'll go out on the internet and find a conflicting answer.
When did the internet become, in your eyes, so important a weapon? Has it been 5 years, 10 years,
5-6 years? Yes,
6 years.
Yeah. In fact, took John and I probably about 3 years to get down a style of writing to make the internet part of the contest. There's been a lot of talk about, well, how are you going to write the internet out of the contest? And it's similar to years and years ago, there was an encyclopedia set of the movie encyclopedia. And it's about 14 volumes, and it had notes and information and all just a massive amount of information about every movie ever made. And there were teams that went out and spent the $1,000 to acquire it. And there were other teams that were saying, well, that's not fair. I said, why is it not fair? You know, they've incorporated that into their team, and they use it, and they get questions right from it.
Right.
Well, and now in the same way, we're utilizing the internet so that if team has it, well, we write it in so that there'll be questions that we'll ask that, okay, people will look around and they'll go, we have no idea what it's even from. You know, is it a movie? Is it television? Is it a book? They have no idea. So they go out on the internet and Google it, and the person sitting at the internet, at the console, will turn around and say, it's a movie. Get your notes. And so now it's written into the contest rather than writing it out of the contest.
Okay. Jim Oliva is our guest. He's from Stevens Point. He's the leader, the organizer, and chief writer of the annual Spring Trivia Contest in Stevens Point. It will take place kicking off at 6 p.m. Friday, April 20th, and conclude the following Sunday night, April 22nd, at midnight. And as Jim has been saying, this is how the contest works. A DJ will read a question, and teams have a span of two songs to phone in their answer. The results go into a computer. The teams can phone in once per question and can only give one guess. At the end of the second song, time is up. The correct answer is given. The next question begins immediately, and this goes on more than 400 times with scoring updates broadcast every hour on the hour. Is that about it?
Yeah, the top five teams are read every hour.
Okay. The scoring updates are for the top five teams.
Right. And then we put scoring updates on the internet. We try for every 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that all ends at 6 o'clock Sunday night when we just don't give any more information out after that. We kind of let the teams stew.
I learned a lot about the contest and about your role and what goes on in Ken Jennings' book, Brainiac: Adventures in the Curious, Competitive, Compulsive World of Trivia Buffs. And you met Ken Jennings, must be 2 years ago or so.
Yeah, yeah.
When he came to Stevens Point, and what were your impressions of him?
He was he's a very nice guy. He really is, and a regular guy. When he first contacted me, he sent me an email, and then I responded back to him with a phone number for him to contact me at, and he called, and we talked for quite a while about this. And his objective was to be writing this book about the contest, and he wanted the contest to be the most important thing, the star, and what all the attention was on the contest, not on Ken Jennings. And so my wife at that time then took the role that she would be driving him around town, helping him visit various teams so he could get more information.
Mm-hmm.
We also had to protect him from the press, because and that was part of the deal, is that he would come here and do this, but we had to keep the contest as the focus of their attention. So anytime I would go out with him, the TV crews would try and follow us, and as soon as they'd walk in, they want an interview with Ken, and I'd be standing in between the camera and Ken, and he'd be hiding behind me talking to the team players, and they couldn't get their camera. No matter which way they move the camera, I just kind of stand in between them, and so he could spend time with the teams. And some really cute little things that had happened. There was an 8-year-old kid who had watched him on Jeopardy and knew who he was, and he said, "Ken, would you autograph my shoe?" And so Ken got down on the floor and signed the kid's shoe, which I thought was really cool. And then every team that he went to, they asked him, they would ask, you know, "Can you autograph our wall or the ceiling?" And many, you know, and he never turned any of them down. One of the teams that I went to visit with, he would always kind of gravitate towards one or two of the members in particular. And we went to visit the Cakers, and one of their players' name is Paul. Paul and Ken kind of really connected quite well, and they were standing over talking for quite a while. And so they were talking about different aspects of trivia and everything. And finally, Paul says, "Oh, Ken, by the way, I'm a little short this week. You think you could spot me at 20?
And Ken, did he Ken's reach in his pocket?
And no, Ken's response was, what is no?
Well, he certainly did well for himself, and I don't know that anyone will be able to top his run on Jeopardy. I know that I tried to watch him often and found him to be engaging. You'd think, this is Mr. Smarty Pants here. Maybe I should not, find him so appealing. Mm-hmm. But he just really was sort of clean cut and didn't lord it over anybody that I could tell. And so for that basis, I was, proud, pleased that he was able to do so well.
Oh, that's for sure. And I remember when he first got here Friday afternoon, we were talking and stuff, and I could kind of sense that he was, looking down his nose at the contest. And then come around Sunday afternoon, he admitted it. He said, boy, he says, when I came here, he says, I was so skeptical because I just thought it was going to be a joke. And but when he went back to his hotel room to sleep on Friday night, he ended up staying up till 3 in the morning because he could not shut the television off. He just kept listening to the questions, and he could not turn it off.
It's online, then. And what is the online address to be able to see there and hear this?
The easiest way to get there is to go to www.90fmtrivia.com. .org.
Okay.
And then follow the links right to the radio, to the listening.
Okay, 90fmtrivia.org.
Correct.
Good. So that anyone anywhere could really be aware of what's going on. They can't really take part because they're not registered, correct?
Right, but this year we are going to accept registration in advance from people so that they can play online. We did a little experiment with it last year, and we had 6 teams playing from outside the state of Wisconsin.
Okay.
And they enjoyed it. They had fun. And so this year we're opening it up to more people.
So they really need to get in, though, ahead of time in order to...
Yeah.
And is it still true that there will be about 12,000 people officially registered?
Generally speaking, yes. Last year was down to about 11,100. And it fluctuates yearly simply based on when it's held. It seems that in the years when it's held prior to tax day, April 15th, it's down. But if it's after April 15th, it's up.
So it should be up.
It should be up this year.
All right. Our guest is Jim Oliva of Stevens Point. He's the organizer, chief writer of the annual Spring Trivia Contest, the world's largest trivia contest. It's held in Stevens Point, and it kicks off, Trivia 38, kicking off at 6 p.m. on Friday, April 20th. I'm Jim Packard, and we'll take your phone calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard on for Larry Mueller today. Glad to have you along with us as we talk about the world's largest trivia contest. It's held each spring in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Our guest is Jim Oliva, who leads this contest. And what are the kinds of questions that you really enjoy including?
The best questions are always the ones where there are people on every team that will just go, oh, I saw that. I know that. I know it. I know it. And they'll sit there and think and think and think. And, boy, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they get it. They just remember it. They break up that gray matter and, bang, here it comes. Those are the good ones. Also the ones where, they'll be sitting there for 2 songs and going, I know I saw it. I know I saw it. I've seen the answer to this somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they dig and dig and dig, and they can't find it. Then we give the answer, and they go, oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah. And maybe 2 questions later, they're digging through some other books or magazines, and they find it.
The first question in the contest always has the same answer. Tell me what that's about.
Well, It seems to be that it has something to do with Robert Redford, and it's either going to be Robert Redford or Bob. The years of that are palindrome years. The answer comes out being Bob. But the first year that I wrote, one of the questions was, who was appointed sewer commissioner of Provo, Utah in 1976? And we gave the answer of Robert Redford. And I got the answer out of Time magazine. And boy, there was all kinds of complaints about it, that the answer was wrong. And got on the phone and was talking out to people in Provo, Utah, and I ended up talking to the sewer commissioner of Provo, Utah, who was not appointed, by the way. But anyhow, what ended up happening is that the article in Time magazine said Provo, Utah, when in reality it was Provo Canyon, Utah.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so after several hours on the phone, including a call to the Sundance Lodge and talk to Mr. Redford's partner, I confirmed that my answer was wrong and I threw it out. And believe me, a lot of soul searching, and boy, was I upset because, you know, I'm right and that's it.
Well, that leads to the next question I have. What's the difference between you, Jim Oliva, Oliva, the mild-mannered computer store operator, and Oz, the dominator of the contest?
Oh, the Oz is just an incredible jerk. He really is. An argumentative person from the word go. And I am really very argumentative about things, and very I've saved questions on the tense of verbs.
Some people respect you for that.
Well,
I read that in Ken Jennings' book. It's got to be true.
It is, and it, you know, the questions are constructed that way, so that we can save them based on the way the question is worded. Anyhow, the Robert Redford, out of respect for the ability to make mistakes, we keep a Robert Redford question as the opening question, just as a little humility. Very little. That's all the humility I'm going to give.
That's all you can muster today. Our guest is Jim Oliva, and if you'd like to join the conversation, there is a line open right now in Madison at 263-1890, or toll free at 800-642-1234. Let's see what's on Bob's mind in Muskego. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I say my son was a participant in your contest for the past few years, and he was telling me about they made a documentary movie up there about 3 years ago, I believe it was.
Yes, they did.
And when is this movie going to ever be seen anywhere? I mean, besides Stevens Point, and I'd like to see it because I guess my son is in it, but.
Okay, it's been in film festivals, and the producers are trying at this time to get some kind of a major distributor to pick the film up and either distribute it into theaters or distribute it on DVD for sale. And until that happens, they're guarding it quite closely, and there aren't any copies of it available anywhere. I don't even have a copy. And I've seen it. It's really quite a good movie.
Yeah, I understand it won some prize in New York or something like that.
It won first place in White Plains, New York, at a film festival there, and then it also won in the Madison, Wisconsin Film Festival last April.
Yeah, well, bring it down here to Milwaukee. We'd like to see it.
I would love... I'll tell you, I'm pretty sure that once this thing gets out, a lot of people are going to be quite mesmerized with it. Even the audiences that have seen it, who knew nothing about the contest, were oohing and awing during the contest, during the movie itself, because they get so wrapped up in the players and the teams and the emotions that are going on during the contest.
Bob, thanks very much, and good luck. We hope you're able to see that documentary sometime soon.
Okay.
Bob is in Muskego, and we'll go on to Kim in Stevens Point. Hi, Kim.
Hello. Say, I'd just like to comment that I think that a far greater number of people participate in this than what Jim is indicating, because a lot of people come in and out of these houses where the teams are headquartered that may not even be registered. There's a lot of people that call me asking me questions sometimes, and I'm not really registered, and people call friends in Madison. There's a group of people I know that come up from Madison. They stay in a hotel room. A lot of times these people aren't registered, but they still participate. And I would estimate that the population involved with this tournament is probably four or five times than what Jim is probably indicating.
Jim, is that true?
I have to agree with them, because that is absolutely registered players. When a team comes in, they put down how many players are on their team, and they may put down 20. And I get to talk to these people during the year, and they'll say, oh, by the way, by the time the weekend was over, we had 40 players. And I'll say, well, that's okay. I'm not going to go back and change anything, you know.
Now, registration is by team, and can the team be by any size?
Yes, there's no limitation on
that. And so what is the cost of registration per team?
$30 per team.
Is there some way in which that registration fee is lowered?
No. Oh, well, yes, there is. Sorry. We have merchandise available, T-shirts and caps and mugs and glasses and things like that. And if a team purchases $125 worth of merchandise, then the registration is cut in half. And if they purchase $250 in merchandise, then the fee is waived.
I suppose that happens with many teams.
Oh, yes.
One of the things that I was curious about that Ken Jennings brought up is this business about notebooks. In playing Jeopardy, of course, you're just relying on your memory. And as he noticed, Ray Hamill, for instance, of Madison, told him that he had 31 notebooks with detailed notes for over 8,000 movies. So that's the kind of fact-gathering that you were talking about earlier.
Correct.
Let's go to the phones for Carrie next in Reidsville. And Carrie, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Oz.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I was calling because I feel that you're being rather humble, and that everyone knows that the Oz is a pop icon locally in Stevens Point. And I just wanted to say that he's such a treasure there. The trivia contest, I've worked it and played it. It's totally enjoyable. And it's a way to escape to another world for a weekend. And I think everyone who plays knows that, from the parade to the last 54th hour when you've had barely any sleep and you see everyone at their best and worst. It's just a magical time in Stevens Point. And what it does to the local economy is phenomenal also, and for the university. And I just want to say thank you, and that I just think you're a great treasure to that community. So, and to the state, and nationally now that we have the web. So thanks for doing the contest every year.
Thanks, Carrie.
Carrie, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. She sort of reminds me that all of the funds that end up being collected and merchandise sold, that actually goes to a very good cause, does it not?
It goes to Friends of 90 FM, and each year, at this point where we're at, funds are funneled back to the radio station in the way of two $1,000 scholarships to students that are active in the station, as well as capital outlay for the station. We just are in the process right now of purchasing a new transmitter that we've pledged $60,000 for. And on an annual basis, we subsidize the budget of the radio station by about approximately $14,000.
Very good. Robert is in Stevens Point. Robert, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hello. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Robert.
Say, I just wanted to comment that I wasn't living in this city when this program, this contest first began, when I, to my understanding, you could receive it within no more than a few blocks of the radio station itself. And I've been here in the city since about 1979 listening to it. And what I'm impressed with, Jim, is that you've been able to design questions that are not readily accessible via the Internet, where there's still the challenge for people to search hard material, be it books, magazines, and rely on their knowledge. And that just impresses me that you're able to design those questions in that fashion.
Well, it drives me crazy, I'll tell you that.
Well, that was my comment, and thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
Talk about the writing process that goes on with your partner.
Well, we get together on Saturday and Sunday nights starting in January, the beginning of January, and usually about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday and about 5 on Sunday, and just sit in the basement in the trivia room and start going through notes and books. And I pretty much call and say, John, I need a sports question. Or, John, let's switch over to a movie, get on a movie question. Let's do an old movie, old TV, whatever, and just try and keep some kind of flow going. And then as far as the questions, we try to ask them even in a way where maybe if we asked it one way, you could search it up on the Internet quickly, whereas we ask it differently, and all of a sudden, there's no information. One of the areas that we've stopped asking questions pretty much is song lyrics. Song lyrics are way, way accessible on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a waste of time. And unless it's really a cool lyric, and then we look at it and go, well, it's on the Internet, but who cares? So we'll do that. One of the things, going back to what Kim had talked about, were the number of people that are out there and getting calls and all of that. Years and years ago, I asked a question about former coach John Jardine at UW-Madison.
Right.
And the question was, what high school did John Jardine coach football at prior to entering the college ranks?
Massillon, Ohio?
No. Fenwick High School in Oak Park, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I know that is because that's where I went to high school, and he was my football coach there. But the question was asked at 6:30 on Sunday morning, and the teams just got on the phone and started calling his house, and his wife was on the phone, and she kept answering the question, and he was steaming in the background. And so later that day, I called him up and apologized to his. I talked to his wife because he wasn't in, and I explained to her who I was and how I knew the answer and all of that. And it was very funny. And when I student taught in Madison, I taught their son.
Oh, yeah.
So that was just a
nice
one of those things where people, they will call anywhere.
Right. In addition to the questions that are being read on the air, there are also other questions. I see that there's some visual questions that are put out in your newsletter, The New Trivia Times.
Right. We have 24 pictures that we put in the Trivia Times, and there's questions asked about them.
You've also got a car-based treasure hunt.
Yes, and that's the Trivia Stone, and we send players out, and it's kind of like a car rally type thing. And there was a period of time when we did without it. We went for about 4 years without it and then brought it back after I finally figured out a way to get it, make it a little bit safer than it was. And there are players that come here expressly for that. That is why they come here. They want to be in the Trivia Stone. That's the only reason they come up.
And so you, how does that work on the air then?
We read clues at various times, and then they have to follow them. And there's three times during the contest that we tell them, okay, you follow this clue and you'll end up at a certain place, and you have 45 minutes to get to this location, to run this clue and get to this location to get the ID number that's placed in your rule book, in the front page of your rule book, stamped. And we have stampers out at that location.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got 8 ultra-difficult questions read out intermittently during the contest as well.
Oh, we did that 1 year. That was called a take-home test.
Uh-huh.
And, boy, did that... That was quite the little fiasco with that one. It was cool. I mean, people enjoyed it, and some people really, really liked it. Other people didn't like it. And it was only for 1 year. I did it as an experiment to see if I was going to continue to do it, and I did stop it. Teams would work on they. I had talked to one team, and they had worked on it on one question for 8 hours.
Gosh.
You know, where they had three people that were dedicated to that question. It took them 8 hours to search down the answer. But the reason that I stopped that one is one team complained, you know, part of the reason we come together is to do the contest is so we have time to talk with each other. And with those questions in the contest, it took away that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, that was enough reason to stop using that particular take-home test.
The top three teams are given trophies.
Actually, the top 10.
And those are still donated by Point Beer?
The top three are by Point Beer, and the remaining seven are from Point Trophy.
Okay. And how soon do you know, once midnight on Sunday comes along, who those teams are? I guess you've been monitoring all along, and
yeah.
So you have some idea of who's going to finish
on
top. Yeah,
we know by 10 after 12.
And the teams themselves, one of the teams, the Franklin Street Burnouts, they get their 15 minutes of fame in Jennings' book, Brainiac. Their
mm-hmm.
captain is Mike, is it Wiza?
Wiza, yes.
And they've been playing together for 33 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be playing this year?
Oh, yeah.
And they're the only
definitely.
Team
they've
that is still the original
float.
Members, are they not?
Pardon me?
This is the only team with its original members?
Oh, no. There are many teams with original members. Substation has been playing since the beginning of the contest, and they still have some of the players that were here back in 1969 when they were students.
The most successful teams, you mentioned Cakers.
Cakers.
I also see Network and Occupation Fool.
Oh, yeah. Occupation Fool, which is, they're still around. It's CNOF, and they've variations of the name have from in years, over the years. It used to be Occupation Fool, then and there was a team called City News, and then City News combined with Occupation Fool and became CNOF.
Okay. You've got Mothership Mutants from Planet Funk. You've got the Opie Maniacs.
Those are regulars, and a lot of teams change their names every year, too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
coming up with clever names.
It sounds like a lot of fun, and I know that this is the hard part for you now. You've got to work the next weekends for a few months to come up with all the questions and answers.
Yes,
so,
sure do.
But once it comes April 20th, why, then Oz goes to work.
Oz goes to work and has fun. I get to relax for that weekend because I don't have to do anything.
All right. Well, it sounds great. And, Jim, thank you so much for spending some time with us to talk about this world's largest trivia contest.
And thank you, Jim.
All right. Jim Oliva of Stevens Point. He is known as Oz there. He's been organizing and writing the annual Spring Trivia Contest in Stevens Point for the last 27 years. Coming up in just a moment, Pat McDonald will be along to discuss the Bridge to 2007 project, the 75-year-old Michigan Street Bridge at Sturgeon Bay. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks to Steve Williams for on-air phone production. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.